to Mindvine, a mental health podcast for everyone. Since our first episode in 2016, we have been sharing stories of recovery, engaging with experts, and tackling the stigma associated with mental illness. The Mindvine podcast is produced by Ontario Shores Center for Mental Health Sciences and is available on YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts.
Welcome to the Mindvine podcast. My name is Daryl Mathers, and I'm your host today as we discuss psychiatric eMERGE service, which is a big topic here at Ontario Shores, as we are advocating to bring a new model of care for people in crisis dealing with psychiatric issues. And we're here today with one of the world's leading experts in psychiatric emergency medicine. He's got a bio that is on my lap here that's far too long to read, but you've been all over the world discussing the empath model, and you're going to talk a little bit more about it. So first of all, welcome, Dr. Scott Zeller. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah. So you're here today. We just had an event where you talked about your work and the empath model and connected to what Ontario Shores wants to do here in Whitby. So there's lots of moving parts to what the empath model is, but maybe you could just talk about maybe what the name is, because I know there's an interesting story behind that, and kind of what it all entails.
Okay, great. And thank you for having me. So empath, real simply, it's an academic acronym. It stands for Emergency Psychiatric Assessment, Treatment, and Healing. And it's a specific model that's to be used in hospital healthcare settings that's directed at the highest acuity psychiatric emergency patients, who ironically have traditionally been the highest acuity patients in any region and at the same time the most underserved, who end up usually in most places in not just North America, but kind of I've been finding across the world, get stuck in medical emergency departments where they sit untreated, kind of strapped to beds for days, sometimes even weeks, waiting to be transferred to an inpatient psychiatric facility. So what empath does, and like I said, it's assessment, treatment, and healing. That's kind of the order that things go in. We want to immediately assess you, immediately start treatment, and that helps to immediately start healing. And the goal is that instead of just holding you for an elusive inpatient bed, that we want to get you better and hopefully, able to go home in less than a day, which really turns the whole system on its head. And that's the big difference. So there's three basic components to empath. One is that we want to change the environment where people are going to from the traditional emergency department. So we're still going to be an emergency level of care, but what we're going to do differently, typical ER is very kind of compact and crowded. And that works really well for if you're doing a lot of multiple physical medical patients simultaneously. For our patients who are having a psychiatric crisis, that might not be an ideal environment. In fact, we know that from a lot of research that psychiatric patients' symptoms often get worse in the typical ER. So instead of that small little confined environment, which often feels like a cell to people who are in a psych crisis and makes them feel claustrophobic or frightened, and like I said, their symptoms get worse, we want to have an open space that's much more feeling like a spaciousness with high ceilings where you get natural light from windows. Maybe there's nice art on the walls that feels soothing. We're changing it from being a place where you might feel kind of confined and frightened and change that into some place where you can feel like you can move around and nobody's going to yell at you, say, hey, get back in that bed or I'm calling security. Instead, you're free to kind of move about, and that helps people to relax, and kind of it's a nice start already towards relieving their crisis. And then the second part is we want you to be seen by a psychiatrist, psychiatric provider within minutes after arrival. So none of this, you're going to be here for hours and you haven't seen the doctor yet and it's okay, it's just psych. We know our folks are really suffering. I mean, they're having symptoms that are making them, in many cases, dangerous themselves, dangerous to others, unable to take care of themselves. They're literally suffering, and we've too often kicked the can down the road and just kind of warehoused them rather than getting them treatment. So if we're able to see them really quickly, have our docs see them very quickly, then we can initiate treatment. And that's a big, big difference because that's going to help those people who are suffering to start feeling better and relieve some of those really distressing anguish symptoms. And then the third part is we're not going to try to make a decision too quickly on whether you need to be hospitalized or not, but give that treatment an opportunity to work and have you in this safe but comfortable environment, and a lot of staff involved and intermingled with you and helping you to feel good and see us all as your colleagues rather than your adversaries, and hopefully see how you're doing over this time and constantly be doing reevaluations. And we get a lot of bang for the buck from that, because somebody who might have looked in their first few hours when we're seeing them that they would have needed to be hospitalized, everything that we're doing together with them, they start getting better, and you know, maybe 10 or 12 hours into their stay, they're suddenly, hey, this is somebody who's going to be able to go home soon. Let's start working that direction. Where in the olden days, somebody would see them and say, you need to be hospitalized, and then 2 days later, they're still on the track to be hospitalized, and nobody's checking to see if anything's changed. And that's another thing. It's a bad utilization of resources. Too many people being pushed towards inpatient beds, which are limited and often elusive, and not really paying attention enough at that front end, and then having more judicious use of those scarce inpatient beds. So win-win-win-win across the board.
So you talked about the empath model as it maybe currently exists in a few places around the world. You know, you spent 30 years as the chief of psychiatric emergency services at the Alameda Health System in Oakland, California. And that's kind of where this journey for you began. So can you talk a bit about maybe the kind of origin story of the empath unit and, you know, what led you to kind of to this work?
So, yes, correct. I've been doing emergency psychiatry for about 35 years now. And for about 20 years, I was the head of emergency psychiatry for Oakland and Berkeley, California, that whole region. I would see a lot of TV, media, newspaper stories about 15 years ago about a continuing crisis in emergency departments across the U.S., and then later we were seeing it in other countries as well. But mainly this problem was a lot of folks are coming to emergency departments with psychiatric emergencies and are getting stuck there because they're waiting for inpatient beds, and sometimes they can be 25%, 30% higher of the patients in the ER, and that's making it difficult for other patients to come in and access those beds, and so people are all very frustrated. And every one of these stories in the media would always end with, well, all these people are waiting for inpatient beds, and this is really a horrible situation where they're not getting any help, but they're filling up beds so nobody else can get other ER help as well. And this pretty much means we need to build a lot more inpatient beds. Back to you, Larry. You know, and that was pretty much the story. And everybody's assumption was, well, if somebody's coming to the ER with a mental health emergency, we need to find them an inpatient psych bed, and that's what we do. But I would see those stories, and working in emergency psychiatry, I knew that that didn't make any sense, because I knew that the great majority of psychiatric emergency patients, we can help get better, stabilize in a matter of hours and don't need inpatient beds. So why is everybody in these other places just kicking the can down the road and holding all these folks, which is just not a very good way to do things? And, you know, if you come into the ER with an asthma attack and you're short of breath and you're going, can't breathe, please help me. They don't meet you at the door and say, hey, come on back and have a seat. We're going to find you an asthma hospital within the next day or so. Hold tight, keep breathing. But that's what we do with psych patients. And maybe it worked 20 years ago when they were only seeing one out of every 25 patients in the ER was there for a behavioral emergency. Now it's one out of every seven. So the math doesn't work for sending everybody to inpatient. So it's long overdue to start saying, hey, maybe we start doing the things for psychiatric patients the same way we would do if you came in with shortness of breath or a heart attack or you're in labor and going to have a baby or anything else that we traditionally do in emergency departments. We can do the same thing for behavioral emergencies. So it was long overdue. So back to your question. I got so frustrated about this, and I knew that there was a solution, but I knew nobody was going to listen to me unless I had some sound data to back it up. And so I put together a study of the work that we were doing in Alameda County, and we published a study that was ended up being called the Alameda Model Study. And we were able to show that because we had psychiatric emergency services in our county, that we had zero psych patient boarding because everybody could be moved over to us as quickly as they're medically okay from any of 11 emergency departments in the region. And we also, of those people who came to us, and 100% of the people who were coming to us from those outside ERs were involuntary. So by their very definition, if they hadn't come to us, they'd need to go to inpatient. But if they came to us, we showed from the study, 76% of them could get better and go home in 24 hours. So we published that in a major journal, and it got a lot of attention. And all of a sudden, everybody was like, wow, there is a different way. And not all these people do need to be admitted. And so it was nice to get all that attention, but then everybody was like saying, well, yeah, but you've got this big expensive system that serves an entire county and 11 hospitals. That's not going to work for us in place A or B. And I understood that, and it was a great point. So I said, what if we could take everything we learned in Alameda and create a scalable model that we're doing from scratch? So even, you know, our place in Alameda was not really designed for what we were using it for, so it had a lot of shortcomings. What if we are going to be able to build something from scratch where we could use all the things we've learned about making a more therapeutic environment, things that help us create a therapeutic alliance with our patients, where people will be comfortable, they feel safe, but also relaxed and kind of home-like, and a place that is, you don't mind being in for a few hours, and where patients and staff can intermingle and everybody's getting along and it feels like kind of a positive environment. What if we were able to do that and we were able to make it scalable so it could be at a small rural hospital or it could be in a busy downtown urban hospital. If it could be an academic hospital, it could be a regular old community hospital. Can we do that? Can we take all the things we've learned and put them together and make this into a model that could work for 4 patients at a time or 40? And so that was kind of the idea that all kind of led to the germination of Empath. And we're fortunate to have a hospital in the San Diego area that also had the county's support to say, let's create a small version of what you were doing with the Alameda model, like you're saying, this scalable idea. So we opened up one there. It had tremendous results. And it's really grown since then as the word kind of got out. And there's been a lot of great research and supporting it now. So there's several dozen across the U.S. And we're also seeing them built not only hopefully here in Canada, but Australia, Middle East, Scotland, South Africa, all kinds of cool places. Singapore just got back from where they're building 2. So it's been really cool and amazing because the first one, that one in the San Diego area, just opened in 2015. So it's only 8 years and now we've got several dozen and probably as many as that being developed across the country and across North America. So it's been amazing. But the key thing about it is that what we really just want is like, this is this population that's really been gotten a raw deal forever. And can we kind of, if it's the worst day of your life, wouldn't it be nice to have a place you can get some help no matter how sick you are or how many other medical issues you have that we're going to try to help you out right then and not just say, you know, we're going to find another place for you to go. It's not our problem. We're going to get you somewhere else. No. Let's bring you to the place where it is our problem, and we're going to work with you, and we're going to do all these great things. And not only does it make sense from a humane and ethical standpoint, but it also ends up being really economic. There's a great argument for it. And it's better for even, you know, somebody might be watching your program and say, well, this doesn't affect me because I don't have a mental illness, and I'm not going to ever end up in a psychiatric ER. Even though, don't jinx yourself, right? But if you're going to the regular ER, if you have to wait 2 hours because half the beds are filled up with psychiatric patients that aren't getting any help, if we can get those folks to better care somewhere else in a more designed appropriate environment? Wouldn't that be better? And then you can get into that ER when you break your arm, because there's no delays, because we're really using the system and designing it so that everybody gets the help they need, and that way everybody wins no matter who you are.
You know, when you say that everybody wins, it just gets me thinking about, you know, the model here in Ontario. And a lot of our patients, you know, on Ontario Shores, we're dealing with people with complex mental illness. This is often not their first stop on their mental health journey in terms of seeking assistance and moving towards recovery. And many of them have had less than ideal experiences in an emergency room. And then they eventually, like you say, they eventually come here or they come somewhere else after, you know, spending who knows how many hours or days, you know, in that emergency room setting. But I think the other side of it is, like, emergency rooms weren't, you know, you alluded to, weren't designed, you know, to deal with these types of issues. And I know in Ontario, like, there's movement towards training in terms of mental health and medical professionals, but they're essentially there to deal with the physical issues that are being presented to them. So you would think a different model would also lower stress and demands on the workforce in those mm-hmm. emergency rooms. Has that been something that's, you know, been your experience?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And in fact, one of the things that really drove the much wider acceptance of Empath was during the pandemic, where there was hospital leaders who were looking at their emergency departments and saying, oh my gosh, what happens if a COVID surge hits here? And right now, our ER, 40% of the beds are filled up with psychiatric patients. And think how stressed all of our staff is already. And if all this comes in, what are we gonna do with all these folks? And how can we solve this? And so, and then people were on their staff saying, you know, if we built Empath, we could send all these folks to much better and more immediate care, and then we'd open up all that space for COVID patients or any other kind of emergency patient who came in. And so those folks who work in the emergency department who really feel their strongest point is working with those physical emergencies rather than psych emergencies, they're able to kind of get what they want to be doing. And then we're able to get these folks over to a much more appropriate environment with staff who are trained to work with mental health emergencies. So it's a really good thing on both sides of the coin. And to your other point, I think you know, when you have people who've been through the system a few times and they're used to kind of having a bad experience, and I think that leads to other bad things that happen. I mean, first of all, me as an emergency psychiatrist, I know that I'm often the first psychiatrist anybody might be meeting in their lifetime journey of mental health. And that's an important role, because if I screw that up, that might set them in a bad path. You know, think, what a jerk that guy is. Why should I listen to anybody who's a mental health professional? You know, screw that guy, you know. But if I do a decent job, maybe they're going to see us as collaborators rather than adversaries. And that's going to be a different thing. And that's how you get a journey towards wellness and recovery, as opposed to revolving doors, bad things happening. So, you know, one thing that often happens, if you call many mental health professionals traditionally, I don't know if everybody's got this same voicemail nowadays, given some of the things that have happened recently, but traditionally, everybody used to have a voicemail. If you're a psychotherapist, a psychiatrist, psychologist, any kind of person working in mental health, you often would have a voicemail message, so that if somebody called you up, it would say, hi, this is Dr. So-and-so. Before they say anything else, they'd say, if you're having a psychiatric emergency, hang up and dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room. And then if you didn't dial 911, or I mean, if you did dial 911, which is emergency in the U.S., they would bring you to that nearest emergency room anyway, right? And so if you're somebody who's been through the system a few times, like you were saying, you know, you might start thinking, gee, should I go to my nearest emergency room? Well, last time I was having symptoms of a psychiatric emergency, I went to the local ER and told them I was hearing voices telling me to do bad things. Next thing you know, there was these big, huge people who came out and they grabbed me and they slammed me to the ground and they tied me down to a bed and they pulled my pants down and they stuck three needles into my bare bottom. And then I was unconscious for a long time. And then next thing I know, I woke up in a hospital 50 miles away. Gee, should I go there again? I mean, that's basically, maybe that's why we haven't seen more people going voluntarily, and they end up going involuntarily because then they don't, if they're thinking it's going to be a horrible experience, maybe they wait too long and then things do go south and they end up having first responders involving and then they get brought there involuntarily and the whole cycle repeats. But if we make it more of a nice experience where you feel welcomed and you feel like these people are here to help, not to hurt, then maybe the next time you might be more willing to reach out for help because you're not expecting you're going to be treated like garbage.
You mentioned something in your presentation today about those emergency room visits within the empath model, turning those 24, 36 hour stays into outpatients, which is I wouldn't say completely different than emergency room experience, but in a lot of cases, you're dealing with you're dealing with emergencies, physical illnesses or injuries that can be treated and discharged, relatively quickly. When people think mental health, they think that's not a quick fix, whether it's 36 hours or longer. So, mm-hmm. When it comes to how that plays out in the empath model, like what is the goal, when somebody's coming in a psychiatric crisis? Whether it be 36 hours later, a month later, 3 months later, like what path do we want to have people on when they're coming into the model, the empath model?
Well, there's a basic, there's something known as the six goals of emergency psychiatry, which are also sometimes known as Zeller's six goals, because I wrote them like 20 years ago, but you'll find them mentioned as that in the literature. One of the main goals of the six goals is, I think it's number four, treat in the least restrictive environment. So I think sometimes historically, the emergency department staff would think the best thing we can do for this person is get them an inpatient psych bed. And we work in psychiatric hospitals and we think they're pretty good places, but we don't get locked in there and stuck there for the next 2 weeks and maybe it wouldn't seem as nice a place if that was the case. So wouldn't it be better if we could get our psychiatric care being able to come and go as we please in our home, feeling comfortable, feet up, relaxed, being able to eat or drink, whatever you want. So that's maybe the direction we should always be going. That's the least restrictive environment. Most restrictive is being restrained and forcibly treated. Least restrictive is engaging in voluntary care, feeling safe, comfortable in your own domicile. So instead of thinking the best thing we could do to help this person is get them an inpatient bed, we should be thinking the best thing we do to help them is find a way to get them better and get them back home. So that's kind of the whole idea that undercuts empath, which is we want to turn an emergency patient into an outpatient. And if we can do a really good job of helping somebody's crisis and get them better as quickly as possible and getting them back out to the community, getting them to have a really strong, warm handoff to a outpatient care and housing and what have you, that's going to be our best way to help somebody not get into an emergency situation again and not have to come back and not be in crisis and all the horrible feelings and outcomes that that entails. But instead, let's get somebody so that they're in great shape and hopefully is not going to get into a crisis again. And that's part of the whole idea. I mean, one of my goals in emergency psychiatry has always been to put myself out of work. if I do such a great job that nobody gets into a psychiatric emergency again, I'll get a job driving a truck. It'll be fine.
When we were talking earlier about where places in the States and other parts of the world have brought the empath model, and places like Ontario Shores and in Canada that want to, I think it really speaks to like the global issues around psychiatric emergencies.
Yeah.
What are those conversations like? So when you're having the conversation with people from Ontario Shores about your work and empath, and you've had those conversations with people in Singapore and other parts of the world, Are they eerily similar? Like, are we all facing the same type of challenges?
Yeah, no, that's that. I think that's been, you really hit the nail on the head there. It's been the thing that's been most amazing to me is how similar this issue is worldwide. You know, I go to Cape Town, South Africa, and see the ERs there, and they have the same situation where they have psych patients backing up, waiting for inpatient beds, and no idea what to do with them while they're there. So, yeah, Singapore, wherever you go, it seems like the same thing over and over. And I think it just goes to the historic lack of something that you brought up before, which is the idea that psych doesn't work fast. And yes, traditionally, psych is more about we make changes in psychotherapy over months and years. And if you go to a psychiatric hospital, you're going to be there for a long time. And that's how we do the work. I mean, when I was in training, when I was in residency in the 1980s, the average length of stay for a psychiatric patient in the hospital was 6 weeks. And I mean, we used to call up the insurance companies to get authorization for another week at a time. We would just call, you know, say like, oh, he's still doing bad. Okay, you got another week. Now, the average length of stay in a psych hospital in the U.S. is, I believe, 6 days. So even that has changed just in time to go from like 40 days to 6 days. So we're realizing that everything on these high acuity levels of care can be done faster, and there's just no reason to have people in the hospital for a long, long time. And we've seen that in other medical things. I think how many surgeries are done as what's called ambulatory surgery now. You don't stay in the hospital. You come in the morning, you go home in the afternoon, you have fairly major surgery. We've done that. It used to be that somebody would deliver a baby and they'd stay in the hospital for a week. Now they go home the following day. So we can do this with all these other medical areas. Why is it that we've been so reluctant to do that with psych? The more and more that the research and the data show us is that the great majority of psychiatric emergencies can be stabilized and resolved in a matter of hours. And we're not doing justice to any of our patients by delaying helping care when they're in a lot of anguish, that they're suffering, they're hurting. What we should be doing is delivering immediate care just like we would for anything else that's an emergency condition. There's a law in America that's called, known as EMTALA. It's yet another acronym for...
well, it's healthcare.
Yeah. Emergency Transfer Active Labor... Emergency Medicine Transfer Active Labor Act, something like that. And basically, it's the law in the U.S. is that if you go to the ER and ask for help, if they determine there's a medical emergency present, they can't ask for, if you have ability to pay, they need to try to stabilize you or else admit you to the hospital. The key part, the reason I'm bringing that up, is that EMTALA says that psychiatric emergencies are medical emergencies. So you need to make the same kind of effort to treat them as you would any other, like coming in with chest pain or after a car accident. And that's a good thing. And the only problem has been historically, they'd had that choice, stabilize or admit to the hospital, and they thought the choice was admit to the hospital. But if we instead intervene immediately and do that same kind of life-saving treatment that we do with somebody with chest pain, somebody with short of breath, we can have those same kind of wonderful results with psychiatric emergencies. So all the research shows that we can make people better in a matter of hours instead of days, so why not? If you're suffering, I often point out to folks where they say like, yeah, well, psych, you know, it's so ambiguous. You know, we have the problem with psychiatric emergencies is we don't have a blood test to prove that there's a psychiatric emergency. We don't have an X-ray we can send somebody for that proves they're having a psychiatric emergency. And so my response to that is, yeah, you're right. We don't have a blood test or an X-ray to prove somebody's having a psychiatric emergency. Do you know what else we don't have a blood test or an X-ray for? Pain. And we all know what pain feels like. And we don't ever say, when somebody tells you, go, I'm in a lot of pain, you don't go, well, I don't know. I don't know if you can
also tell what pain looks like.
Yes, yeah, I know. We understand what pain is. So maybe if you think of a psychiatric emergency as the equivalent of the worst headache you've ever had in your life, and if you came into the ER saying like, oh my God, the head's splitting in two, they're hitting me in the head with an axe. you wouldn't say, well, let's have you come in. We'll see about getting you admitted to the hospital in the next day or so. You'd be like, no, I need help now. Help me. And I think that's what our patients have been like. And just maybe it hasn't been recognized as much. But if you think of somebody having that worst headache in their life, you want to help them right away, right? You don't want to kick the can down the road and say, like, let's get you help right away. And we know we can help people and we can get them feeling better in a matter of minutes or hours. So why wouldn't we?
Yeah, I guess it speaks to like stigma and education around mental health, which has come a long way, but we still have a long way to go. Today, you mentioned research. I know there's, I won't be able to cite a number of the statistics you rattled off, but I know with Empath, you know, you'd mentioned that the rate of people returning had, you know, is quite low. They usually go into your outpatient or emergency patient to outpatient to mm-hmm. get the help they need. There's financial benefits in terms of freeing up space for people to get help. And there's, you know, it occurred to me when we were downstairs, you know, we live in this data-driven world. Everything's about data and efficiencies, even in sports, which we were talking about earlier. Everything is about data analytics. And so when you see what you present, like when I say you, is like the Empath model in terms of the possibilities of improving care, you know, it seems, you know, black and white, you know, especially for people in mental health. As you were going through your presentation today, like all the people that are connected to mental health, like you could read their body language and see their heads nodding. Like it almost seems like a no-brainer, if you will, that, you know, this is something that we need to adopt. But you know, the people that are making these decisions about whether to adopt these models or fund these models, make changes to existing systems, don't necessarily have a health background or in particular a mental health background. So what are some of the challenges that we need to overcome to get those people that, you know, kind of hold the purse strings, if you will, to allow us to move forward, not just on Ontario shores, but around the world in terms of making changes to our healthcare system that's more mental health friendly?
It's such a great question, and it's really spot on about how really that you use the term no-brainer, and that's something that I hear from people all the time. Why aren't we doing this? This is such a no-brainer. And we can point to how it's not only so much better for the patients, so much better for the system, but actually save payers millions of dollars a year. I mean, an inpatient stay is much more expensive than the stay in Empath. We were able to show, in one setting where the average Empath stay cost $2,000 and the average inpatient stay was $12,000. And if we're now avoiding inpatient 75% of the patients that used to need inpatient, which is a pretty consistent number across all the Empath models, 75% stable and go home in 24 hours. That goes into the millions of dollars in savings in a matter of minutes. You know, it's just this one hospital that had that number showed that they saved their county mental health department $36 million over 3 years by getting people better, more, immediate care. I mean, why wouldn't you do it? But the system's never been set up to reimburse a program like this. There's not great ways to say like, oh, well, you know, you go into... get an x-ray, the insurance payers or the government insurance or however your program's reimbursed says, oh, okay, x-ray, we pay this for an x-ray. But they don't have, we pay this for an Empath stay, because it's never been there before. And you'd be surprised at how many systems are like, well, we've never done this before, well, we can't do it then. Or there's places that will want to start an Empath program, and then the government says to them, oh, well, we don't really have a way of paying you, but how about we give you like $37 every time somebody comes in? I mean, it'll be that ridiculously low. I mean, that's not even a number I'm making up, to be honest. So that's where some of the real challenges comes from, is that there hasn't been really good reimbursement. And you would think that you would go, look, we could save you millions and millions of dollars a year. If you pay $2,000 for each stay, we'll save you $36,000 for every four patients you see. But you know what their response is? Well, where's the $2,000 come from? I'll save you $36,000, you've spent $2,000, but I don't have the $2,000 to give you.
but like, you have the 36.
Right, right. but that's a different bucket. Yeah. See, that's the way that they always think about it. Or even in the emergency department, there's a great study out of the University of Iowa that showed that in the first year alone, they were actually able to add $1 million to the ER's bottom line by moving patients out of the ER to better care in MPAS. But that money gets credited to the ER. Nobody says that that's empath money. And then some CFO will look at the empath and go, looks like they're not really making enough money to cover their costs. Said, oh, you saved $1 million over here. Yeah, they're doing great. You know, it's basically the way that they look at it. So that's been a huge problem. I think the number one thing that I hear from places who want to set this up is, we love this, we want to do it, we know it's the right thing to do, it's the no-brainer, but how do we get at least enough reimbursement to cover our costs? Because, you know, hospitals need to pay the rent. Mm-hmm. They can't do things just because it's a good idea. So there's been a lot of work in advocacy with government agencies, with payers, with people. You know, they often, there's licensing issues. What is this? Is it inpatient? Is it outpatient? Is the ER? Well, it's kind of in between all that. It's a different kind of idea. Well, we don't have that. You know, my work has been always kind of uphill. But we were talking before how my whole life I'd been a Chicago Cubs baseball fan. I guess I've always kind of like cheered for the underdogs.
Yeah. Well, hopefully you don't have to wait as long as the Cubs did.
Well, the Cubs won the World Series. Maybe Empath will do the equivalent at some point, and there won't be these challenges.
You mentioned this morning too, just that the Empath model, while it's, you know, it's your baby, if you will, you know, you're not profiting from a licensing perspective or anything. Like, this is essentially an open source model that
right.
anybody in the world can adopt. And I wonder for you, like, you're obviously very passionate about psychiatric medicine and the work you're doing with the Empath model. What keeps you going when you face these obstacles? And like, obviously there's some positives when you meet people that want to continue your work in other parts of the world, but, you know, what drives you to keep doing this work?
Mm. What a great question. I don't know if I've ever even been asked that before. I think because it's still, you know, hasn't been accepted in most places and it's still so rare, and I know it's the right thing to do. And I, having worked with psychiatric patients my whole life and knowing what a really bad deal that they tend to have gotten and how their lives often are a struggle. And there's a lot of the stigma that you were mentioning before and a lot of misunderstanding. And, sometimes I can remember a hospital a few years ago that their CEO was away for a couple months doing something. And while he was gone, the whole hospital was working with us and they were all on board and they were ready to start getting forward and even breaking ground on an empath unit. And the CEO came back from wherever he was, and they all went to tell him about it. And the first thing he said was, why would we do that? I don't want those people on my campus. You know, it's that kind of attitude that's still out there and it's still prevailing. And it means that our folks are still just getting this bad deal. And we know that we can do better. And we know we have a humane, ethical, cost-effective alternative. And maybe it's just the fact that there's still so much that's preventing it from being accepted. And that, you know, like when you say it's a no-brainer, and I completely agree with you, why isn't this in hospitals all over the country and all over the world? Why is it we still have to keep, advocating and trying to make people say, yes, this is the right thing to do? So maybe that's where the passion comes from. It's just like so many times that it's almost like I toss and turn in the middle of the night going like, why about a certain place that's pushing back and trying to prevent things from happening. And I'm trying to think of, is there a way we can get them to see the light kind of thing? And I think that until that day comes where this is like, people understand this is the right thing to do and we can really help people suffering like this in a really good way. Let's stop trying to prevent it from happening. And I think that day is going to come, and then maybe I'll sit back and relax.
And you'll drive your truck.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll sit back and relax and enjoy it. And
well, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And, you know, as you were just chatting, a lot of our patients, like I said before, they go through the ringer before they come to us. And sometimes those experiences actually prevent them from seeking treatment, like, you know, or at least there's a gap in terms of their recovery journey, because for whatever reason they're, you know, they remember what that experience was like. And if we can find a way to, you know, because for some people, their first experience, like you said, is with an emergency room or in a psychiatric crisis. And if that can instead stop from being a start and stop to being just a start and then, you know, a continuous journey, then we'll all be better off, not only as the people who are need help, but also the people treating people with living with mental illness and the people who love them. So thanks for doing this. Thanks for coming in from California and braving all the travel issues that you had and for meeting our people this morning and chatting today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Great job. Thank
appreciate
you.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
That was awesome.
Make sure to like and subscribe
and turn on post notifications. Thank you for watching Mind Vine Podcast.